Well, it's okay if I stand. I'm a little more comfortable standing. I'm used to standing and talking for my job. My name is Jill, and I am a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jill.
Thank you so much for being here, especially the night before Thanksgiving. I didn't know if it would be a sparse crowd because I know everybody has so many things going on, but I'm so grateful to everybody who's here. My journey in OA began, it is now, I celebrated 15 years of abstinence. That abstinence began as simply just sugar and white flour. It has since, though I'm not in the HAL program, it has gotten much stricter just because of health issues. It's sugar, wheat, flour, it's all grains, it's all that kind of stuff. So it's gotten stricter just because of health reasons. But that everything has been a progression through. Program through the years, through the 15 years. When I began, I had lost some weight when I came in, but my highest weight was almost 300 pounds. And I had lost about, I guess, about 30 pounds before I gave into program. And so probably altogether, the weight loss I've sustained is probably about 140 pounds over the years, which has been a real gift. Because when I grew up, looking back, I grew up in a house of compulsive overeaters. My dad was over 400 pounds at one point. He was always extremely obese. My mom was always over 200 pounds. My sister and I struggled all through. I was always the fat kid in school, always, always, always. And my brother, though, did not have any issues with food. My brother was adopted. So I always grew up from an early age knowing that there was something different and there was something physical about this and physiological, because we all grew up in the same house. So I never really was brought up. I felt horrible about myself. I struggled. I mean, self-esteem, just it was non-existent because, you know, you were growing up at a time that everybody, it was all about, you know, everybody wanted to look good, but also just feeling normal. I think it was even more than that. Maybe going to high school, it was a matter of how I looked, and I hated that I looked so ugly compared to everybody else. But really, it was always a normalcy. I could never fit in. This disease never let me fit in. Everybody else could eat something and then walk away, and I looked, and it was always so strange to me because I kind of wanted to dive at what they left behind as they walked away. I knew I was so different and so strange. And in my house, it was just, you know, it was just painful. I didn't know how to control myself. And so it was constant. I mean, by the time I was about 9 or 10, I guess, my mom had taken a job. My dad actually worked out of the house. But I would come home from school and I would just binge. I would just binge, binge, binge after school and then not eat dinner. That was just my existence. I can remember being in college. By that time, I think I had starved myself down to a normal weight, which would not last. But I can even remember being in one of my friend's rooms and taking her food. You know, I can remember taking food from places. It was just always this pursuit. And at my grandmother's house, oh my goodness, we'd go there and she had all sorts of stuff. And I would just gorge and go find whatever I could. That was my existence growing up. It was a pursuit of food to feel better. It was very, very sad looking back. It was very sad. You know, I have kids now and I have a daughter and I look back at myself at that time like I would my kids now and I feel bad for what it was. But, you know, God had something in mind for me. And through those struggles, something did come out of that. It wasn't, you know, that's not the rest of the story, so they say. So I grew up in this way all through grammar school and high school, morbidly obese. Before I went to college, somebody introduced me to some fad diet, whatever it was, and I lost my weight before college. And so I went to college in normal weight. But see, here's the problem. When you grow up like that, you're not normal inside. You know, you may have controlled on the outside, and I used some bulimic activities to keep me a little bit normal. I would never call myself a bulimic, but that helped a little bit when I was in college. But I wasn't normal inside. I knew I wasn't like everybody else. So I was always kind of on the outside, even though I was very social and even had a lot of friends. I always knew I was different. There was something very abnormal about me. So eventually I was only in college for 2 years and got married and went away. My husband was in the Air Force at the time, so we traveled halfway across the country and went out to North Dakota, where I promptly gained back all of my weight and then some because of the strain of the transition. And so we began our marriage. We just celebrated our silver anniversary. You know, God bless my husband. He loved me no matter what, which is really a sweet story because I don't think that's always how it goes, honestly. I was just one of the graces. I had plenty of pain, and I think we all have pain and we all have graces. That was one of the graces. And so I gained back that all and more. And by the time we were married for like, 5 years, I'm almost 300 pounds. And I remember growing up, now I tried all sorts of diets. I mean, everybody knows all the diets I was on. When I grew up in my house, it was like Weight Watchers. We were like the Weight Watchers family. You know, that's what everybody was doing, Weight Watchers. But there was a period that my mother found out about OA. There was a period. That's how I even knew about OA. So my mother knew about it, and that's why it was always in the back of my mind. But like, we were in the Air Force. I was like in North Dakota, Germany. You know, there was like, OA wasn't big there, you know? So there weren't a lot of options. I could have perhaps found AA, right? There were, you know, perhaps if I had been more open. I think there were always options. But I went ahead, and when we were actually in North Dakota, I went to an inpatient eating disorder place, and there I was kind of reintroduced to OA, but came out and there weren't really meetings. There wasn't anything, not that, again, if I had found AA, but I did relapse right after that, and then we moved to Germany and everything, you know, was, you know, kind of got worse. But then came the time we moved back to the States, and we were in Ohio, and that was about the time, I was 29 years old at the time, I'm 45 now, but I was 29, and I remember thinking that OA always stayed in the back of my head, always stayed in the back of my head. And what happened at the time, we hadn't had children yet. My body was so messed up from the weight and the eating. I couldn't get pregnant. And then they put me on medicine because my hormones were all so messed up that I shouldn't get pregnant. And so, but finally it came to the time that I remember looking into my husband's eyes and realizing, I mean, we'd been married almost 10 years by that point, realizing he wanted a family. You know, he hadn't said anything because he knew physically that I, you know, my issues and everything else. But I remember the day that I looked in his eyes and I knew he wanted a family. And that was the day. That was it. That was the cost. That was the bottom. I couldn't keep a family from my husband. That wasn't right. And so picked up the phone and I called OA. And there was a lovely lady at the other end. And she invited me to a meeting, and kind of like how I treated it when I was inpatient. Okay, this is how I treat everything. Perfectionistic, act upon, right? No inkling of like receptivity to things. I've got to control it and do it. And I was going to get through these 12 steps. How long do we do it? How long is it going to take each step? We can get through these. We can be done. And so then I was talking to this lady. She was very, very patient with me. And I told her, yeah, so, you know, how long did it, you know, take you to get through the steps? You know, how long is this still my thinking? She goes, oh, she says, you know, we never really graduate from the steps. I'm thinking, really lost on me. She was very patient. And so I went to a meeting, and I found my first sponsor at that first meeting. And I was just talking to her 2 days ago. And she was lovely, and a lot of people saw that it was a very special gift, we had a very special chemistry. She's a lovely, lovely woman, and she helped me through. In fact, she still talks about when I first called that I remember it was a 9 o'clock at night phone call, and I remember she said, you know, remember me telling you that I could call at 8:59 or 9:01, that it would be okay. But see, that was the seriousness with which I took this thing, because I had hit bottom. This was it. And I remember my Last Supper shopping trip the night before, because I had talked to her at that meeting. And so, you know, the next day I was going to start, so I had to go to the grocery store and get all my abstinent food. And I put one of my favorite items in my cart, and it was a long, thin box, and I put it in my cart, and I kept looking at that thing, and I walked around the perimeter of that store over and over, because I struggled. Do I do this Last Supper or not? Do I do it or not? And I kept going around. Now, at one point, this has never happened, I'm 45, never ever before had this happen. The thing actually slipped through the grocery store cart and fell to the ground. I've never had a grocery item fall out of my cart ever, all right? So God was trying to tell me something. But I put it back in and I kept walking around. And I remember the point at which my abstinence truly began, because my abstinence began in my heart. It was the point at which I said, damn it, if nothing changes, nothing changes. Hope I'm allowed to curse on that. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because that's what I said. If nothing changes, nothing changes. And I put the box back. And I have to tell you, I've had three babies, and I've never felt something ripped from me like I did that box of food. In that day, my abstinence began because it began in my heart, because I didn't want it anymore. And so I went and I got, and it was a death. It was, I don't know how else to put it, but it was a horrible death. And so I went and I bought my abstinent food and I began the next day. And I had, there were a lot of challenges to it. There was somebody that came over the next day. I was hosting a potluck at my house. And there was one person that was a little upset that I wasn't tasting their things, because here I am, you know, rather large. Clearly I like food and I'm there a little offended. And so I had to go through all of those obstacles. So I began my journey in OA that way. That was my bottom that I hit. And that was the abstinence that began in my heart. And it was difficult. The physical recovery came quickly because I had righted my food. But this program is a physical, emotional, and spiritual program. And I have done much work in the past 15 years. I've had health issues to this day. I mean, the last 5 years, what I have learned about physically, about what's wrong with me, I can't even tell you. The research I've had to do, the doctors I've had to deal with to figure out, because my food plan is, you know, it's just, I've had to go a lot of different places to figure out what I need. Physically, the last 5 years, I've invested more time in understanding this whole thing. This is not just emotional and spiritual. It is physical. There are real physical problems with my body. And I understand a little bit more about what they are. Emotionally, I've done my work over the years. At the beginning of program, really, I think I entered, this is probably more of a spiritual dimension comment, but I began my program with God being my personal abstinence manager. He was my vending machine, that as long as I put in my step work, as long as I went to my meeting, I could pull out at the end of the day my abstinence. And you know what? That was good enough to begin. But they tell me that this is spiritual kindergarten, so it was going to have to grow from there, because that's very external. Those external things are going to have to become internal. So it began with that, God being my personal abstinence manager, and I had to kind of appease the gods, in a sense, and do all the right things and make it come together and do the rain dance to make sure I got my abstinence. And that's really what it was at the beginning, and that was really okay. My sponsor was very patient with me. I was very, very willing to do anything. But things have deepened and changed over the years. I eventually, I think emotionally things changed the most when I went through a very, very difficult personal crisis, and I started to open up to going to counseling and these types of things, which is kind of funny because all my counselors don't think y'all are good enough to help me keep my abstinence. They thought that their stuff was better than what you had, and I had to say thank you, but I got a group of people that are just awesome. And so they really believe that they could psychologically look at my food issues and help me through them. But I learned so much, though, from those counselors. They were amazing. They taught me the exact nature of my emotional issues connected with this. So they were amazing at what they did, and I learned a lot, because when I started out, I thought I did, I couldn't figure out. I knew I had to be this really bad person to have this disease, and so I'd do my inventory work, and I'd write down my inventory, and I wouldn't have a lot of stuff on my inventory. I didn't have a lot of resentments. I just didn't, and I could never figure that out, because I knew I was a bad person, and so I could never figure out this gap, and I always thought that, you know, I had to find all these things I was doing wrong. Well, it was very interesting, because what counseling ended up revealing was that actually I was kind of hyper-responsible, and I took so much responsibility on myself that it was probably more, like, for instance, one particular person that's very difficult in the family, this person has kind of plagued me forever. What I learned was that my problem was not having boundaries. That was what was wrong, that I kept thinking that I was wrong. So I kept doing things to try to do the right thing, because clearly if this person wasn't happy with me or this relationship wasn't working out, it was something I was doing wrong. That's how I was approaching it. But counseling gave me the exact nature of my wrong, which was I didn't know how to set proper boundaries, and that was right and good, and that was also very hard for me. And it's easy if you just keep trying to appease someone and make things right. Sometimes that's easier than setting a boundary and risking a conflict. So those are the types of things that I learned emotionally in program, and the counseling helped me learn the exact nature, helped me do actually a more accurate fourth step. And that's what I think the biggest thing that counseling gave me. It didn't let me off the hook. And there are plenty of times that I'm the offender. I mean, you know, I on a routine basis have to put in my inventory that I, you know, came through the kitchen on my broom again. But I have now a better and deeper understanding, and that is just a matter of time and going through and keep being a seeker. I have to keep seeking. I can't stay where I am. And that's why, because I remember them telling me this was spiritual kindergarten, these steps. I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I just left my heart on the floor and this is kindergarten? What the heck is first grade? But I learned that what it means is that these are the fundamentals for me that I have to always keep going back to, that there's actually some really neat stuff to grow into. And so learning, there was actually relief in learning the exact nature of my wrong, because I was convinced I had to be an axe murderer on some level, the way I was reading the big book, but actually I was just reading it wrong for me. And I had to learn that just through life events and counseling, and that's just how it had to happen. And so now I look at my part in things a lot differently. And I've also learned that there are times that I honestly didn't have a part in what happened. I mean, you can be violated or you can be offended, or you can be, there's a lot of things that can happen that I don't actually have a part. But you know what my part is going through the forgiveness process. My part is going ahead, and I took this, actually, this really neat class. It was a 3-part class on forgiveness. I did it over 3 different weekends. And it was phenomenal. It was programmed through and through. Because what it taught me was that there is this gap that exists between what life is and where I am and what I want. And even what we all deserve, the dignity of the human person, right? Fair enough. There's always going to be a gap, though. And if I live my life resenting that gap or fighting against that gap, that I'm going to have to medicate. Because I'm going to be a victim. But what this forgiveness class taught me was how to grieve the gap. It taught me how to grieve the gap and turn it over. I have to look at my part when there's my part, but there's a certain point that there's just a sadness to a lot of things that happen in my life that I can't control. And that there becomes a point at saying, at honoring the desire that I had. It's usually for something pretty good, right? I don't really desire to be an axe murderer, right? My desires are good. But it taught me, it taught me how to take this gap, honor what I wished for, but then turn it over to my higher power and trust that there must be something different or better in mind, right? And so I'm kind of going all over, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that physically, I had to learn that there absolutely is a physical nature to my disease. Apart from emotional and spiritual, my body's broken. It just is. And I know more the nature of that. It has to do with insulin. It has the blood sugar. It has to do with hormones. It has to do with adrenal glands. I've learned all that. I know that. Emotionally, there are also things that are very, very broken and that I have blind spots and that I can't know them. What I figured out until I went through a personal crisis, there's a lot of things I didn't even know how to do about my inventory, that I have to take problems that exist and allow them to teach me. And so emotionally, I can heal as I go along and let program do that. But spiritually, I learned the spiritual kindergarten meant that as long as I keep turning to God and I keep asking for help and I keep trying to keep my side of the street clean, that there's somebody who loves me and is going to help me, that I have support and somebody whose ways are better. It's kind of like I envision my higher power as this light emanating from my higher power that creates this very, very large swath of light. I have the choice to stay in that light and to seek, even though it's difficult, but I can also walk outside of it. But he always has that light present for me if I wish. And that's what program was for me, is stepping into his manner. His manner includes that I need to look at my defects, and I need to keep that clean, and I have to make things right with other people who I hurt. That's what happens in the light. And that when I don't, I step out, and that it's painful there, and it's kind of dark and lonely, and I'm going to need help that's going to hurt me. I'm going to use things that hurt me. So when I learned in program, I learned steps. And the steps taught me a lot of things. And I look at the steps differently now from when I did 15 years ago. First thing, from the beginning, step one is powerlessness. Having to understand that I am powerless over this. When you're looking in the mirror at almost 300 pounds, that step was never a big issue for me. It was a matter of, what do I do with this? I never understood what to do with it. So when people have talked about thinking that, and I understand that people can think that they can go back to normal eating at some point. Can I tell you that I never, ever, 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 ever thought that one? Like, step one, I mean, where I've been, I've never thought. I've always had just such an ingrained, like, just totally, total deep awareness that I'm powerless over food. Step two. This is the one I'd like to spend a few minutes on, because I think this is the one that I didn't know how important step two was. And this is the one that I think has grown the most over the years, and that I've realized needs probably more attention than any of the others, because none of the others are going to come well unless I can do them. I can go through the motion. I can do my perfectionist thing, and I can do my writing, and I can go through. But will I do the steps in my heart? Will they really be in my heart? And it really hinges on step two to me, because step two, I call it the trust step. And, you know, it came to believe a power greater than myself would restore me to sanity. Do I really trust and believe that there's a higher power that cares about me and that wants to help me? Can I trust that? If I can't trust that, my higher power remains the vending machine, the God that I have to appease with all of my program work. But when I trust my higher power, I can more take the rest of the steps on the journey of more like a relationship with him, in where I'm working with him to stay in his light. And so I take my trust in step two, if I can, and there's a lot of ways to get there. I have found the quickest way to get there is the gratitude list, because that tells me he takes care of me every day. And if I can include things on there like my pillow and my warm covers that I woke up with, and that I had really soft, nice jammies last night, and I woke up and you know what? I can afford the expensive version of my breakfast abstinent food that I like. I can afford the expensive kind, you know. It's a full dollar, but I can do that. And I can have the good one in the morning. Does that go on my gratitude list? And then my kids, they're all healthy, they're good, everybody was safe. And then can I go through? Because if I equate my gratitude list with my higher power taking care of me, that's step two work to me, because I need to trust him. Because then step three will work, because that I really believe that I'm turning my things over to somebody who will believe. And whoa, step four and step five with someone you don't trust, that's a little violating, right? That's really deep stuff. And you know, you gotta expose yourself. And we're made to. We've gotta be known why, so we can be loved no matter what, and so we know what we need to clear. But I can do that. That could be my vending machine step too. And you know what? It works even if I do, because I'm willing. And that's good enough. And that worked for years. I didn't lose any accidents treating God like a vending machine. But what he's been trying to teach me over the years, I think, is that he'd love this to be a little bit more and not just that. And so step four, I have to come and I have to say, you know, where are my resentments? And why was my resentment list so short? Because I wasn't doing a whole lot of work on my fear list. That's where the novel's written for me. My fear list. That's why the resentment list. Because I'm so stuck in my fears, I have my resentments, don't get me wrong. It's just, that's just not where my neurosis lies. It lies with my fear list. And so my 10th step has a lot to do with my fear list for the day. That's really where that work is done. And so my 4th step has got a lot of that, and that's got to be given to somebody else. So I'm known, so I state it outright. I can't deny it. And then you know what? Somebody else, it's a beautiful thing, accepts me no matter what. No one's ever screamed and run out of the room when I did a fifth step, ever, ever. They've only looked at me and shared with me some of the things that were on their fifth step that they understand, or said, oh wow, that was light compared to mine, right? And so they were loving and generous, and now I could be cleared of some of that wreckage, because I'm always going to have some of it. And then I have to come to be willing to have some of these defects removed. This was baffling to me, be willing. This was another one. I'm like, oh, my perfection. So we can zip right past six and go to seven, just turn it over. But I didn't realize how much I liked my defects, some of them, right? Fear can be kind of stimulating, right? It can keep me going. It's, you know, it's work to come out of that mindset into a calmer mindset, into a mindset of trust. That takes work to make that transition. So I have to actually want these things and really be done with them. And then I can ask for them, you know, to be removed. And God is very faithful to me. These things aren't gone like the food was gone. They do take time. The Big Book talks about that. You know, these things take more time. But I find that over time, as long as I keep being honest about them and I keep sharing them with my sponsor and at meetings and with other people, especially my fears, that, you know, over time these things can calm down. And then I have to make a list of people to make amends to. And again, that list, because I've got three kids, three teenagers, it's usually the broom thing. But I apologize a lot for talking harshly. You know, I have to do a lot of that. But I have a better relationship for my kids. I don't know, you know, I didn't have a great relationship with my mom. And I don't know, and believe me, I'm the last person who's going to be up here. I don't do any, like, my parents did the best they could. I am, like, so beyond blaming the wherever it went, and it helps being a parent, because I know I'm screwing my kids up in some way that I don't even know. So it's an easy point in life to say, I forgive anything, because it's, you know, I see what this is now. And so I think that what it's afforded me, and even with my husband, is someplace where it's just a nicer life when you don't have the baggage and that you keep making it right. I mean, the pride monster sure would like to come in and find out all the things, because it's really easy to figure out what the teenagers are doing wrong, right? Really easy to say what you did. But if I didn't handle it right, I always go back and say, look, it was fair for me to bring up this issue, but I didn't handle it well. You deserved something better, and that wasn't fair. Let's have a conversation now. And, you know, and I'll apologize, and I'll ask them even for forgiveness. That creates a different atmosphere in life. And the pride monster wants to get me because I can get so angry at them. They're teenagers. They can be such teenagers, right? But in the end, this affords something bigger and better. If I'll go through the pain up front, there's something bigger at the other end. That's what it's all about. That's what the light's about. Yeah, there's pain at first, but there's something so much bigger in the end. There's light. It's a positive message, a 12-step program. There's beauty at the other side of this pain. And so then, you know, making amends, then that takes me into each day my daily inventory, which is usually where I get my amends list. That's become something that's just kind of continual. And I have to be careful because I'm so worried about, did I do this right? Did I do that right? I sent an email to somebody the other day regarding work, and I can fret in my mind about it. And they email back, oh, thank you so much for being honest and compassionate and all this stuff. I'm like, geez, I gave an hour of my life to this in my brain thinking I screwed it up. And so I have to go over in my mind, where have I over worried about things? You know, where have I been harsh? Have I been selfish? You know, because the computer, you get on the computer and you can go here, there, and everywhere, but there's like people that actually like are around you that need you, you know, so it's easy to get caught up in research and that type of thing. So I have to 10th step the things that are typical for me or anything that happened. And then I'm the worst at the 11th step. I need it the most, but I'm such a doer that the 11th step, it's painful for me. It's downright painful. And there's a lot of growth that I need in that area. And what I've learned in program in the areas that I really stink at, that I need growth, is a very freeing part of program for me, that all I need to do is say, this one's too hard for me. Can you just open up a space for me and show me? That's all I need to do. And it's amazing when I give up control and I ask, it comes. I was even thinking about this morning because I got this email from a family member about these four options to do for Christmas, and one looked worse than the next. And I'm thinking, oh no, what am I going to do about this? I don't want to be mean to this person, but these things look like pure torture for me and my family. We don't want to do any of that. So I said, remember, Jill, you walk away from these situations and you allow something else to come in. You don't control it. You don't have to act upon it. You need to walk away and give God time to do it. I went out and did my exercise. What a reminder. I came back in 30 minutes later and there's another email from another family member saying, nope, we can't do that one, that one, that one, that one. And they said the whole thing and they pointed it all out and I didn't have to. And that's one of my biggest lessons in program. And if I have to get better at meditation, I have to turn that over because there needs to be a quiet space of receptivity. I know this in my mind, and I haven't done it because I just do and I act upon and I get things done, and then I don't have a space to receive and be quiet, and that's very, very necessary. And so that's what I'm very, very bad at, but when I do it, I really, and even this morning, it was like I'm like, you know, as far as meditation, I'm kind of inept and I haven't practiced a lot. I pray all day, but the meditation I'm bad at. But even this morning was a form of meditation for me, just walking away and allowing something else to come in and not having to act upon it and control it. And as far as my prayer, there's a spiritual writer that I love. He's my favorite. He's absolutely my favorite. He's like from the 1200s, I think, but he's great. And he talks about going into each situation and just giving it to God. Before I even start a situation, before I even have a phone call, before I go to prepare dinner for my family, before I go and go to work, that I just give it to God. And then at the end, you know, if I need to talk to him in the middle, but at the end, give it away. Just this kind of process of inviting him into things and then, you know, thanking him at the end for things. And I find that to be a really good kind of spiritual prayer practice for me during the day. And I trust and I hope if I see you at a meeting in another year, I hope I'll tell you I made a little further on the whole meditation thing, because it is a small form of torture to sit still and be quiet. I monkey mind. And then my 12-step is service. The job that I work is a lot of service, not so much in OA, but in OA, just even you being here tonight, being at a meeting is service. What you do for meetings, and sponsorship, all of these things, because I can't keep what I don't give away to somebody. So that's why I always appreciate these calls, because of my life situation now, you know, with the kids, with the job and everything else, I can't commit to certain meetings regularly, and so I'm bouncing around a lot. So something like this, kind of a one-shot deal, I'm always grateful to get the call because I can always arrange for a one-shot deal. That's always I can do. So I guess what I wanted to share tonight was that my 15-year journey has been a journey that has taken me in unexpected directions. My life has gone all over the place in many ways. There have been major moves, there have been major personal crises. I've had three babies in program, now I have three teenagers. And it's my food plan was here, now my food plan is different. It was different through all the pregnancies. Everything has changed, but there's been one abiding thing, and that's the steps, and that's the program. And that's what's been abiding, and that's what allows all of it. And it's about when my heart is aligned with these things and I truly believe it is right and good for me to do all of these things and I can see that that's what I'm made for, it becomes something easier to do, because it's not easy after 15 years to keep doing, you know, committing the food every day. You know, at the beginning it was easy. I was so perfectionistic. I was, and that served me, and that was fine. It's not easy after 15 years doing all of these things, but it makes it easier when it's a gift. When program is a gift, it makes it easier, and when I can see that, and that's what I've seen in the last 15 years. It's just been an abiding gift throughout. That keeps giving back to me. And so I think that's it. I wanted to just touch on the journey. So thank you.
Thank you.